Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
We have reached high noon here in Nashville. Second half of the show, Darren Donick and Chase. Willie Donick, Chase McCabe, broadcasting from our homes. Marquise Munson holding it down at the studio, chiming in as well. Dan Graziano from ESPN has joined us once again. We're glad to have him back on the show. We have talked a little baseball today. We've talked a little hockey. Now we turn our attention to football as the big news throughout the league the last couple of days, of course, the signing of Cam Newton by the New England Patriots, and especially here in an AFC town, if you will. That was big news in terms of what it does to the dynamics of that conference. Dan, thanks a lot for joining us again.
My pleasure, guys. How are you?
We're hanging in there. So your thoughts, I mean, it's nice to sink our teeth into a story like that, a signing. I guess we were all waiting to see where Cam Newton ended up. So what does it do in your mind to the AFC picture? How much of an impact can he possibly make?
I think his impact could be significant, assuming that, you know, he's healthy and he looks like his old self. But the reason we were waiting so long for him to sign is because teams couldn't convince themselves that he was. So it's a low-risk, high-reward situation for the Patriots. He could be getting maybe the highest impact signing of the entire offseason if you have a fully healthy Cam Newton. And you could also be in a situation where, you know, if he's not healthy enough, if the foot doesn't check out, right, if the shoulder becomes a problem again, he could be a guy that doesn't even make your team. So I think it's a wide range of outcomes, but certainly the potential high end of that range justifies what it appears to be a very low expenditure on the part of the Patriots.
That makes a lot of sense. And with that in mind, the range that could happen, you have to prepare yourselves, and we know the Patriots prepare. That's what they do. But how much, in terms of maybe an offensive philosophy, will they commit to Cam Newton to try to fit his strengths? I mean, he is certainly a guy that's got a unique skill set. And, of course, you ask yourself the question, can he still do those types of things? So how do you think they'll handle that part of it systematically?
I think their system will probably stay the same. I mean, it's worked, obviously, with Josh McDaniels there running the offense for a very long time. I think a lot of Newton's success there will depend on, you know, the way he learns and processes that system. But, you know, they are smart coaches, and they will tailor the offense to accentuate the strength of whoever's running it. And if you have Cam Newton in there, if you have a fully healthy Cam Newton in there, you know, you'd be silly not to incorporate quarterback goal line runs, right? Or you know, ways to get him on the move, or, you know, play action stuff that accentuates his arm strength, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I think that the Patriots, if Cam Newton is the starter, which I think if healthy he will be, I think they'll spend training camp sort of getting to know each other. And within the confines of what McDaniels does, they'll find ways for Newton to flourish.
How much do you think the Patriots were able to get information on his health? You know, how did they do that? Because we've been talking about it here for a long time, Dan, about Jadeveon Clowney and how much of his, you know, sitting around and waiting has to do with, you know, you'd like to maybe have some more information on the doctor material. You'd like to have him in for a physical, that kind of thing. How much do you think the Patriots were able to get on Cam's situation?
Yeah, I don't know exactly for sure yet. Obviously, that's still a question that we're trying to get answered. But I know some free agents have signed, and the team has set up physicals for them with sort of a team-approved doctor near their homes, right? So let's say you live in California and you sign with the Packers. This is a hypothetical. I don't know if the Packers are doing it this way. They reach out to a doctor near where you live. They set you up. They say, get over there and get your physical, and the doctor will send us the results, and then that deal can be official and finalized. So the physical for Cam, my understanding is, hasn't happened yet, and the deal is obviously contingent on it. But, you know, the the layout here, I mean, if it's really a minimum salary or close to a minimum salary plus incentives, you know, you don't necessarily need to convince yourself of the health because, again, if he turns out not to be healthy, maybe there's a provision in the agreement that allows you to scuttle the deal completely, and certainly even if not, he gets to training camp and gets hurt again, you're not out very much money. So I think that they've obviously been able to convince themselves through conversations with Cam and his representatives and possibly Cam's doctors that it's at least worth taking a shot. And then from there, they'll figure it out once they can get their own doctor or their own affiliated doctor to take a look at him firsthand.
Dan Graziano of ESPN is with us. So is your belief that it's going to be training camp with Jadeveon Clowney? And do you have a favorite still, or did you ever have a favorite with him and where he might end up?
I always thought from the beginning that he'd go back to Seattle because they really liked him. They just didn't like the price he was setting at the beginning of free agency. So figured the demands would come down and they'd work something out. But, you know, the longer it goes, the more you think, you know, that's maybe not the likely outcome. So with Clowney, my understanding is that, you know, he'll wait. He wants to wait until he gets something like the deal he is looking for. And there are some moving parts in the pass rusher market that still could affect it, right? Like if the Jaguars have to trade Yannick Ngakoue, and there are teams that are waiting to see whether they get him, and then, you know, the deal gets done, and now the teams that didn't get him, maybe they get a little more desperate for Clowney, right? And I'm not comparing the two players, but like if you're still looking for an edge rusher guy, and let's say an Ngakoue trade is your first choice and you don't get it, maybe that makes you more interested in talking to Clowney at a number that appeals to him. So in an offseason where no one had to be anywhere yet, and we don't know what's going to happen, it seems like Clowney, who's made quite a bit of money in the NFL, the former number one overall pick, is content to wait it out. And instead of taking the best deal that's available to him now, wants to see how good a deal he can still get, knowing that there are factors that could work in his favor. So, you know, we've heard obviously Tennessee, we've heard Cleveland, we've heard a lot of teams associated with Clowney throughout the offseason. At this point, very hard to handicap because whatever anyone's offered has not been enough to convince him, and nothing has really happened over the last month or so to change that.
Somebody we really liked and got to know during his time here in Nashville is Logan Ryan, and we just haven't heard anything related to him in a long time. I know the Jets, it was rumored for a while, but that never happened. Mm-hmm. He's still a free agent. Why do you think that is, and where do you have any indication of where he might end up?
No, the when I've asked that question of teams, you know, executives of teams, why wouldn't this guy be signed yet? They tend to say it's a price issue, that maybe he views himself as a cornerback who can play on the outside and should be paid like that, whereas a lot of teams probably view him better as a slot corner, and obviously there's some difference between what slot corners make and what, you know, the premier outside corners make. So Ryan is in a situation somewhat similar to Clowney, where rather than just sort of take the best thing that's been offered, he continues to wait it out and insist that he knows what he's worth and hopes that someone will come closer to that before it's all said and done. And if that doesn't happen by whatever your date is, right, training camp, regular season, week five, whatever you've decided your drop-dead date is, then you have to assess and say, okay, well, who's offering what, and do I take it, or do I sit out, or do I retire? I have no idea, but I think my understanding is that he's in a similar situation to Clowney, where his number is one that the teams haven't agreed with, and rather than just sort of say, okay, fine, he continues to wait and believe and hope that someone's situation will change to the point where they do offer him something closer to his number.
Something that we've discussed a lot is, you know, when you look at the AFC, Baltimore, Kansas City, to me, will be 1 and 2 in some particular order. We'll have to let that play out. But those two teams are at the top. But then the question is, what team comes in at number 3? And of course, here we have the debate of, well, why not the Titans? Could it be the Titans? Are the Titans better enough to be at that position? So how would you answer that question of the team that comes in at number 3?
Certainly would put them in the mix because we have uncertainty about New England now, right? And, you know, Buffalo, I think, looks like a team on the come, and they could certainly be in that conversation. The AFC South, to me, is difficult to sort out because you have you know, the Colts, I think, if Phillip Rivers has anything left in the tank, could really flourish with better quarterback play, right? And the Texans, obviously, we can, you know, we can look at what Bill O'Brien's done and, you know, wonder what he's thinking, et cetera. But they do win the division kind of all the time, right, 4 out of the last 5 years. So it's hard to write them off. And then in the North, very strong. I think, you know, not just Baltimore, but with Roethlisberger coming back, Pittsburgh should be a factor. Cleveland should be better this year. So I think the AFC is a jumble. I don't have any issue with someone saying Baltimore and Kansas City are look like they're at the top. I mean, on paper, I think they both do. But if you're Tennessee and you're going to get the same kind of, you know, productivity out of Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry as you did last year, I think you have every right to call yourselves a contender and you know, for a division and possibly that three spot. But remember now, the demarcation line is different. It's not, you know, 2 versus 3. Like, the only bye is going to be the one seed in each conference. So being 3 versus being number 2 doesn't necessarily make the difference that it used to.
Yeah, when we had the conversation earlier and I filled out my 7 teams out of the AFC on June 30th, which I know is just asking for it, but I did that based on just to have the conversation. 6 and 7 was tough for me. Just right now, figuring out those teams that are going to fall in 6 and 7, I had Indy and Cleveland, and I'm like, I don't know if I feel great about that because of what you just said about Rivers, and then Cleveland is Cleveland.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, again, it's Cleveland should be, well, you know, at some point, right? I mean, Charlie Brown's going to kick that football before Lucy yanks it away, right? Like that,
right.
Cleveland should be good, and we keep saying this, and they have all the talent to be a contending team. They believed coming into the offseason that they needed to obviously change the coaching staff, and what they had last year didn't work, and calm everything down as a result of that, and fix the tackle position. So signing Jack Conklin in free agency and then drafting the Alabama kid whose name escapes me, is it Wills? Jedrick Wills. They feel like they might have fixed their tackle position. So if they did, and Kevin Stefanski is a coach that can, you know, manage them through a season better than Freddie Kitchens did, then they don't feel like they're far off. So I think they deserve to be considered a contender. I do think they're in a very tough division. I think Cincinnati will be improved. So I think that'll be a tough division to sort of win a pile of games. I don't know. Baltimore winning 14 again seems far-fetched. But, I think there's 3 in the AFC South you'd have to consider, 3 in the North you'd have to consider, 2 in the East you'd have to consider, and then I guess depending on what you think about the Chargers and the Broncos, there could be 1 or 2 or 3 in the West. So AFC, a big jumble. It'll be good for the AFC that they went to 7 playoff teams.
Dan Graziano from ESPN here with us talking football. Dan, as we let you go, fair penalty for the Patriots based on repeat offender status, what they did exactly in the Bengals game in terms of the filming? Do you think the penalty was just?
Yeah, that's an interesting one because I it was a little bit harsher than I thought it was going to be. I mean, to dock them a pick and to fine them more than they got fined for the original Spygate back, 12, 13 years ago, I think surprised me a little bit. So it's obviously, I think the league was trying to say we're taking this seriously, but I don't think they're saying, you know, this was Belichick ordering this or anything. So I think they're trying to walk a line between assigning blame at the very top of the organization, but also sending the message that this is totally unacceptable behavior. So docking them a draft, I mean, a third-round pick's not nothing. I think it's a significant punishment, and I think it's, you know, it probably is more significant than it would have been for a team that didn't have New England's history with vaguely similar stuff. And I think because of that, that's fair. I think they, you know, if escalating discipline, even if it's not apples to apples in terms of what they've done before, I think if you're the Patriots and if you're a clear thinking Patriots fan, you have to admit that, hey, our history isn't the best here. And I can understand why they would come down hard on us.
Dan, you're doing a great job on the Get Up. I've gotten into the routine. We're doing our shows from home now, so I'm leading up to our show. I'm always checking to see what you guys are doing. You guys have adjusted very, very well. Thanks a lot for joining us for a few minutes today.
Well, thank you for saying that. I appreciate it, and thanks for having me.
All right. Dan Graziano from ESPN, NFL Insider. When we come back, we'll continue to talk to some of these issues here. I want to ask the question to Chase and Marquise. Do you think the penalty, the punishment was just for the Patriots? Do you have any sympathy for the Patriots? Probably not. We'll talk about that when we come back. Stay tuned. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.